From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 20th day of July, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the Senior Grains Analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, a bipartisan group has introduced a bill to phase out tax subsidies over the next 5 years on ethanol. The Secretary of Agriculture has introduced a new program called Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food. And Colin Peterson just says no to proposals that would allow FDA regulation of the nation's livestock and grain farms. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour, and then you'll have to reminisce with me for just a bit as I recall a trip I took with NASA. Hey, and don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast, and that it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
On this Monday afternoon in Chicago, futures finished the day like this. The nearby September wheat at 542 1/4, settlement price up a half today. December at 568 3/4, 3/4 higher. In the March at 587 1/4, up a penny. In Kansas City, the September hard red at $5.71, finished 4.5 cents higher. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, nearby September futures, $3.23 1/4, a penny higher. December at 333 3/4, up 2 1/4. And the March contract at 347 1/2, up 2 1/4. May corn, 357 1/4, up 2.5 cents. July at 366 1/4, 2 cents higher. August soybean futures up 23 1/2 to finish at $10.33. September at 960 1/2, pulled higher, up 12 cents. November futures, though, lost 0.5 cent to finish $9.23. November beans down 1/2. January futures at 930, a settlement price, a penny and a quarter lower. And the March contract at 934 3/4, down 1 1/4. May futures in the bean pit at $9.37, settled 0.5 cent higher. August bean meal futures at 324.40, up $6.90. September at 297.20, up 150. And the bean oil up 52 at 35.34. August live cattle 86.80, up 42 1/2. The feeders at 104.47 1/2, down 12 1/2. And the August lean hogs at 64.65, 2 1/2 cents lower on the day. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures at $63.98 a barrel, up 42 cents. The August ethanol at $1.56, 2 3/4, or rather 2 6/10 of a cent higher. Natural gas just about 0.1 cent lower at $3.66 8/10. And the RBOB at $1.78 6/10, up 1 6/10. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, $1.68 9/10, up 4 8/10. And the propane at $0.76 even. Settlement price there, a penny and 7/10. Higher. Gold futures finished 948.50, up $11.30. In the Dow at 88.12, up 68.84 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 248.16 is up 3.11, and the U.S. dollar trading at 78.89 is down 0.45 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. It says tonight should be clear to partly cloudy across Illinois and Indiana. Lows will range from 56 in eastern Indiana to 64 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. Tomorrow in Indiana, mostly sunny skies. In Illinois, mostly sunny early. Then some clouds. They'll increase from west to east, says our own Mike Sola. Highs will range from 75 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 84 in southern Indiana. The extended forecast says two storm systems will take aim at the two-state area this week and bring along with the chances for showers and thunderstorms. The first system expected late Tuesday through Wednesday with moderately to locally heavy rainfall in western Illinois. Then that system will weaken as it works into Indiana. The lightest precip expected in the driest areas of the eastern part of Indiana. Temperature should gradually warm up as the unseasonably cool temperatures give way to near normal levels for late July. Growth rates, of course, should increase. We'll hear more about the agricultural weather at the bottom of the hour when we talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
On Commodity Week over the past week, we had a little discussion about the upcoming acre program and sign up. I'd like to make some things perfectly clear on this. The University of Illinois ag economists upstairs have been suggesting, and we've been playing this fairly regularly over the last 5 months, that all farmers take a look at this program and that, as a reminder, the sign up is by August the 14th. U of I Extension and Gary Schnitke and company also say that if you're going to sign up for the ACRE program, that this would be the year you should do that. Later in the week, I'll talk with Doug Yoder and several other folks, and then we'll put part of that program, that discussion on with Commodity Week in the coming week. So you might want to pay attention to that. We'll try to drop at that and maybe the full discussion. I think it'll probably take a longer than half an hour with Doug to get through the whole program. We'll drop it into our Commodity Week program. You can listen to it, of course, online at willag.org, and it can be downloaded as a podcast, too. This is Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Online with us is Kurt Kimmel today. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He's here to discuss the futures markets. Hi, how are you today?
Good. Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, well, it was a beautiful weekend, I have to admit. I was out all weekend long, and it was gorgeous. And then we get a little green in the marketplace today. That can't be terribly bad, although it was all over the place to begin with, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, it traded both sides. The initial call was higher. We had higher outside markets. Crude oil was quite a bit higher. The dollar lower. Metals higher. The Dow higher in the early goings there. And crude oil backed off and the grains backed off. But we were able to hold in there and able to keep most of the corn contracts higher. The beans, the old beans, August up quite a bit, and the new crop steady. Wheat hung in there, but it was back and forth, two-sided, kind of a lot of work end up undone on unchanged on a Monday here. We'll see how the this afternoon's progress reports come in, see if there's any excitement there. But probably the main feature, though, was in the corn. We did sell 134,000 tons of corn to Mexico and 120,000 tons to Egypt. Then also, too, in the bean side of the equation, seeing some renewed interest from China. So the market's doing what it's supposed to do in Econ 101 is to go lower to search out some demand, Todd.
And that's what it's doing at this point. Will it stimulate demand, though, is really the question. Searching out demand is one thing, but stimulating demand is an entirely different type of subject.
Well, if you're one that still has some grain to market, whether it's old crop or new crop, it's probably not going to happen when we want it or soon enough. It's for the guys that need to be a buyer here, sort of as paid to keep your hands in your pocket here so far. But judging by, like you mentioned, the weather forecast, there is no real threat of any extreme weather as a whole. I mean, there are a few dry pockets and a few hot spots in the southwest, but when you look at the entire Midwest, even though it is late and there are some holes out there, there's really no urgency to step up and be a buyer at the present time.
What are you talking to farmers about, and what are they asking mostly about to you?
A lot of typical questions that we see in the market after what we've seen here is hung on a little too long here, don't have as much new crop sold as we
right.
want. But that's typical, and that happens. And our job here at Bates and all the other guys you listen to or visit with, too, Todd, are ones to come up with a strategy to help you through this process. And what I mean by that is a lot of the train of thought is to deal with one crop at a time, and I think that's going to be awful hard to do. I think you got to look long term. And our approach, when we do get a low in here, is to convert ownership to paper and stretch out the marketing process. A lot of feel the marketing process is done once you sell the crop or once we get into new crop harvest, and that's the furthest from the truth, is you can extend that by re-own it on paper here and try to hold it into winter and look for some recovery this winter. But you know, not everybody's comfortable doing that, but that's our best strategy to play catch-up here as we go into 2010.
Kurt, thanks so much.
Very good.
Hey, Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday afternoon.
Possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You are listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Monday. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Dave Dickey's here now with the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, a bipartisan group of House members has introduced a bill that would phase down and out tax subsidies on ethanol over the next 5 years. Under the proposal, the excise tax credit for ethanol would drop in annual steps from 28 cents per gallon today to 7 cents in 2013 before going to zero in 2014. The tariff on ethanol imports also would be phased down and out on a similar schedule. The 12 sponsors of the bill come from either a coastal state or a western state in which there is no ethanol production. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says a new USDA program that will be rolled out later this summer would link local food production with local consumers. Such an effort would demand investment in storage, transportation, and processing facilities in rural communities. Vilsack says he wants the program, named Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food, to link local food and local consumers, quote, so the wealth that is in the past has been leaving the community may stay in the community. It is a strategy for a more prosperous rural area. According to the USDA Agriculture Census, there were 108,000 new farming operations in the last 5 years with sales of less than $10,000 a year. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson wants any new FDA jurisdiction over livestock and grain farms taken out of the food safety bill expected to come to the House floor this week. FDA has food safety responsibilities except on meat, poultry, and eggs, which falls under the USDA Food Safety and Inspection Service. Peterson says if lawmakers do not remove the livestock and grain farms from the bill, he will hold a markup in his committee and report the bill out with a recommendation that the House not pass it. And U.S. beef trade success in Japan may depend on the results of that country's lower house elections expected on August 30th. Japan banned imports of beef from the U.S. and Canada in 2003 because of mad cow disease. The country lifted the ban in December of 2005, but reinstated it for another half year when banned backbone was found in a shipment. Imports from the U.S. and Canada are restricted to meat from cattle ages 20 months or less, with all specified risk material removed. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week, both of which you can hear online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, today, as I'm sure you know, is the 40th anniversary of the moon landing. It was the 20th day of July of 1969 when Apollo 11 commander Neil Armstrong stepped out of that lunar module and took one small step in the sea of tranquility, calling it a giant leap for mankind. Walter Cronkite, who passed last week, saw space as a frontier. As it happens, he and I share that love. So today, I get to remember just a bit about the times in the early 2000s that NASA invited me and a group of University of Illinois undergrads to learn what it feels like to float in space. I wrote and produced this story in a Houston, Texas hotel room in April of 2002. I was there with the floating Illini to take a ride on the Weightless Wonder, the airplane NASA uses to train astronauts. I hope you enjoyed this old story as much as I did the ride. Building 990 sets just off the flight line at Ellington Field in Houston. It's home to NASA's reduced gravity office. That's the crew in charge of teaching the astronauts what it feels like to be in space. When they're not taking the astronauts for rides, they sometimes take college students for rides on the Weightless Wonder. Now, this week, a group of students who call themselves the Floating Illini are flying.
And, get yourself ready for the zero-G. When you do get zero-G, very little motion will get you moving in one direction or the other. So just adjust to how much it takes to get moving around.
You're listening to a pre-flight medical briefing. A doctor from NASA is explaining to the college teams participating in the Reduced Gravity Student Flight Opportunities program how they might react in the airplane.
The other thing that I'm here to talk about is the medication. We have Scopedex, which is scopolamine and dexedrine.
The Scopedex is supposed to control motion sickness. The students are here to perform experiments in a weightless environment, and it's not good if they get sick. About 10% of the first-time riders do. So the doctors dispense the Scopedex, and everyone hopes it works.
They're from Illinois. Laura, Melody, and Todd. How many, please, Laura?
On board the plane before it takes off, all nine members of the Floating Illini work feverishly to make sure their experiment is ready to fly. NASA's made the team jump through all sorts of hurdles during the week and a half leading up to the flight date, and frankly, the experiment is good to go. But the team's nervous. Their flight crew today is Melanie Wise and Laura Butler. As the team does a final pre-flight check, a U of I alum drops in for a short visit and to reminisce about his first ride on the Zero-G airplane. Astronaut Scott Altman graduated from the University of Illinois in 1982 and completed his third shuttle mission in January of this year. He says he dropped by just to say hi to the folks from Illinois and to wish them the best on their flight. He also wishes NASA would have been operating the student flight program when he was in college.
I don't remember that we were doing this kind of outreach back then, but I think it's really a great opportunity to put your engineering theories into practice in a real-world environment.
Well, Scott Altman has spent about 30 days in the weightlessness of space. On the other hand, Melanie and Laura will be weightless for about 10 minutes on their aircraft ride. Now, they'll do it 20 seconds at a time. In flight, the KC-135 sounds pretty much like any other jet airliner. It is the military version of a 707. It doesn't look like one on the inside, though. Oh, there are a few seats in the back of the plane, but the rest of it is covered from top to bottom only with white padding, rather like a giant-sized white padded cell. Well, strapped or bolted to the floor on this day are five different experiments. Some are big, like the one from the Floating Illini. It weighs 300 pounds. And some are very small. The KC is noisy. At least that's the case until it goes weightless. This is the first parabola of the day. A parabola is the up-and-down pattern the KC flies in order to achieve a weightless state. The pilot dives the plane to pick up airspeed to about 400 miles an hour, and then she points the nose up at a 45-degree angle, climbs about 10,000 feet, idles back two of the four engines, nearly stalling out the aircraft, and slowly pushes the nose over into a 45-degree angle dive for 10,000 feet. Well, at the bottom, she turns it around and does the same thing all over again. It takes about 80 seconds. In that 80 seconds, the students are weightless at the top of the arc, and at the bottom, they weigh twice as much. And through it all, they try to remain calm and scientific. After all, they're here to do research, not to play. This is Melanie Wise explaining what the Floating Illini's experiment is all about.
Our experiment is we accelerate fluids up to brimming flow and then decelerate them at a constant rate to study the Froude effects or Reynolds effects during microgravity of water.
Melanie's a researcher. She's also a college student.
Holy cow, it stayed rimming!
Check that out! Check out the fluid!
Holy cow!
Science and fun, but mostly good, solid training happens on NASA's Weightless Wonder. On this day, Melanie and Laura flew 32 parabolas. They'll remember them for the rest of their lives. And if NASA gets lucky, one or both will decide to make a career out of space exploration.
Feet down! Coming out!
With the Floating Illini at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas,
I'm Todd Gleason.
I produced that story back in April of 2002. Thought it might be appropriate to run on this 40th anniversary of the moon landing. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. My wife tells me that it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. She didn't like the fact, frankly, very much that I went back three times total and have been over the top, weightless 104 times.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's time to take a look at the cash grain market on this Monday afternoon. Greg Johnson of the Andersons is with us. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
How are you today?
Doing good. Doing good.
Well, what are we talking about today in the grain market? What do you see?
Well, we could talk about an early frost. That seems We definitely are behind on our growing degree units, and silking and pollination is obviously way behind in Illinois and Indiana. But I think the middle of July, it's just a little too soon to think that we can talk about that every day and sustain a rally. But that seems to be about the only thing left that we have to hang our bullish hopes on it at this point.
Yeah, you know, I took a trip to Dixon, Illinois, which is north of La Salle, Peru, just a bit, not too far north. It's up above Interstate 80. And from here to there, the crops really look pretty good. And what I think surprised me most was how much it seemed that Champaign County, which was way behind, I thought, most every other place, had caught up with the rest of the crop, or at least it looks like it. Everything was somewhere just about to tassel. I noticed on my way in town this morning, there were an awful lot of tassels out there on 150 from Mahomet to Champaign, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think the USDA showed Illinois at 11% silked and tasseled last Monday versus the norm of 55%. So that 11% should jump way up, but nevertheless, we're still behind. A week of cool weather this week. The long-term forecast, keep it on the cool side. It doesn't sound like we're going to catch up anytime soon on growing degree units, so basically we have to hope for an October 15th to 20th first frost, and if we can hold off that long, hopefully everything will be fine.
Yeah, that would. I think you're right on that one. Hey, on movement for corn, anybody willing to move anything?
No. I think we will. I think there is a lot of old crop corn, percentage-wise, that still needs to be sold in these last 2.5 months of the marketing year. We've dropped corn from about 460 down to 320, so that $1.40 drop. If we could get 25 to 30 cents of that back, I know it's not much, but I think that probably is going to hopefully trigger some farmer selling. I'm just afraid that if we pollinate in good shape and if we don't get that early frost in September, we could be looking at lower prices by the time fall rolls around. So hopefully we'll get a little 25, 30 cent rally here, just not really for any reason other than the fact that we just dropped it an awful lot, and maybe the outside markets will give us a little bit of support, and that'll give us a chance to get some more new crop corn sales made.
And the bids for the day from the Andersons
are? Let's see. We've got old crop corn at 327, new corn at 316. Old crop beans are 1028, new beans are 903, and wheat is 447.
Thanks much, Greg.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson's with the Andersons. I'm Todd Gleason.
With his look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. A Quad Cities Democrat will be the only Illinois lawmaker appearing before a governor's panel investigating admissions at the University of Illinois. Legislators pulled most of the strings that led to the uproar over the influence of money and power on admissions at the U of I have so far remained in the background. Few seem interested in talking about their role. Only one of nine asked to testify by the commission investigating political connections on university admissions has agreed to appear. Representative Mike Boland is scheduled to talk before the governor's admissions review commission tomorrow afternoon. Commission Chair Abner Mikva says the focus has been rightly on university officials. He says they should have resisted political pressure. The president of Southern Illinois University says the loss of funding to the Monetary Award Program, or MAP, could mean quite a few less students on this campus by next spring. The grant program has been cut in half for the fiscal year, and Glenn Pichard says that means they may not be able to continue after the fall semester. He's also concerned about the decline in university funding that will come with that, about $17 million in tuition and fees that SIU won't be reimbursed for. Bouchard is hoping lawmakers will approve a revenue enhancement plan to help with those funding shortfalls before the end of the fiscal year. The head of Illinois' newly formed Cemetery Oversight Task Force wants to hear from the community and ALSIP about allegations surrounding Burr Oak Cemetery. Patricia Brown Holmes, a former prosecutor and juvenile court judge, says she hopes to find out more about allegations that workers at Burr Oak Cemetery dug up remains and stacked bodies to resell plots. Holmes, who has two family members buried in the cemetery, says the task force's goal is to find out how the situation developed and keep it from happening again. An online survey of Champaign residents has shown residents favor the look of older neighborhoods, neighborhood shopping centers, and call for more parks and family entertainment centers. And planners say their vision for the city in the next 20 years largely coincides with what respondents want to see in their city. More than 650 people replied to the survey of champaigntomorrow.com. And for those who didn't or don't have web access, mailed surveys will soon be going out to people in the Champaign community. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media and the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. On this Monday afternoon, time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago is online with us. Good afternoon to you, Josh.
Hey, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good. Up in the, 23rd floor of the Boeing building. How do things look from your vantage point?
Clear skies today. It feels like it's September here and a little bit of a chill in the air still, so compared to the middle of July, this past weekend was quite remarkable. We set over 1,000 records on the cold side of the coin, either record high maximum temperatures or record low temps during the night. Over the weekend, that the air mass that came down is really more of a feature you'd see in September than here than July, and the persistence of this pattern of cold air flowing into the Midwest and particularly central eastern Midwest doesn't show really any signs of abating. We won't be as intensely cold here in the middle of summer that we saw this weekend, but the pattern of continuing to get these cooler air masses out of Canada into the to the belt will persist through the end of the month, really, with no real fundamental change to the pattern.
Well, with that relentless movement of cold air into the Midwest, can you begin to calculate how many degree days will be behind by the time we get to the end of the month?
That's a great question. If you think, lots of places here in Chicago or in Illinois over the weekend saw temperatures on average 10 to 15 degrees below normal, that's, called 10 degrees every day on the growing degree side of the equation. You start adding that up for day after day after day, hundreds is easy to say by the time we get to August 1st here. So the growing degree day deficit certainly is a factor here, and really more for the photosynthetic crop of soybeans will have probably more of an impact than corn, and certainly with the cool temperatures here, we don't see any threat through corn pollination.
It'll push back crop maturation, though, I would
think. Sure, sure, and so that starts to turn the coin into September, and unfortunately, I wish we could say more about freeze prospects and early freeze prospects here in July, but we're a little far away for that yet.
Well, we'll just have to deal with growing degree days as they get to us and find out what that is before we start talking about anything later in the year.
Absolutely.
So what do you have as a forecast at this point?
Well, really, other than the temperature staying cool here, the next chance for showers to move across Illinois is with the system late Wednesday, Thursday. It's more of a southern Illinois feature than a northern Illinois feature. That wraps up, and then you get another cold front coming through the region early in the weekend Saturday, and that will bring cooler air behind it for the back half of the weekend early next week. Then you might see some flattening out of the jet stream overall. Maybe we start to lose a little bit of the amplified pattern as we get in the last days of July, but still temperatures below normal, and then precip remain somewhat of an active pattern here as we turn the page into early August.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Hey, Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. On a Monday afternoon, you can listen to him again at willag.org if you'd like. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional support.